privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. His name is Ryan B.
From Visalia, right? From Visalia?
From Visalia. And his, what he says when things get going tough, let go and let God.
Good evening. My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to congratulate everybody that picked up chips and welcome any newcomers. Welcome anybody that's here just trying to get the judge off their back. You know, I did that for a while too. You know, there's still hope, you know, and I'm just grateful to be sober tonight. You know, I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I want to thank my friend Tom, came all the way from Fresno, you know, and all that, you know, and I'm glad you can make it. You know, my story, you know, my drinking, my alcoholism, you know, and my behaviors, you know, they weren't a learned behavior. I didn't grow up in an alcoholic home, a dysfunctional home. You know, I grew up in a very kind, loving home. It was just me and my mom and dad. I got a sister who's like 4 years younger than me. My mom, she tried drinking one time when she was 21, got sick and never drank again in her life. My dad was just the type of guy, he'd get off of work, you know, and he'd have a couple beers at dinner, watch the ball game, you know, and go to bed. You know, we'd take family vacations every year. You know, so I never saw alcohol. Was just basically, it was there, but it was invisible to me because I never saw like any violence or anything that it did in a bad way. You know, I was really involved in sports as a young kid. I played a lot of soccer and Little League, and you know, but all my life, you know, I suffered from that inferiority complex. You know, I always felt less than, not good enough. You know, kind of like the outsider, always left out. And you know, and I was in school, I was always like the smallest, skinniest, shyest kid in class. You know, my mom was telling me not too long back really how in first grade I'd come home crying from school because kids would pick on me for wearing glasses. You know, and I don't really remember that, but I'm sure it's true. You know, in sports, you know, my dad, like, he only coached a lot of my teams, or he was an assistant coach, so my family was always really involved with everything I did all my life, you know, and you know, my mom and dad, though, they never went to church, but I got a grandmother, she's like this devout Christian woman, and she would pick me up every Sunday and every Wednesday and drag me to church, and I hated it, you know, I mean, from the first time I can remember. That was one of the very first places I really felt awkward and like I just didn't belong, like that outsider looking in from the outside, you know. You know, I didn't think the way the people in there did, you know, and I just didn't like church, you know, and but I couldn't tell my grandma no. And I don't know what age it was before, by the time I started telling her no and stopped going to church, but That had an impact on my life, you know, when it came to the God issue, you know, and coming in here getting sober. But for me, my first drink, you know, it came just out of, I couldn't even really honestly tell you. I just had to say that curiosity, you know. I was about 11 years old, and I was like summer vacation between like 5th and 6th grade, and I don't know, I calculated, I think that's around 11 years old, and I was at a friend's house whose both his parents worked and left him home alone, and they had a really big extensive liquor cabinet inside their house, you know, and they were one of those households that had the refrigerator in the garage always stocked with beer, and his parents liked to throw little parties all the time, you know, and so we pulled down a bottle of Jack Daniels, you know, and I knew it was wrong, I knew it was bad, but for some reason it just kind of was exciting to do something wrong, like I wasn't supposed to be doing it. It almost made me feel like all grown up or something, just thinking about it. But I can remember taking that first drink, and I mean that heat coming on me, that choked me up, but that heat all went in my body, that Jack Daniels, and within seconds, you know, it was just like, oh my God, here I am, you know, I'm, everything is okay, you know, and you know, and tried choking down another drink, and I mean, it was pretty awful, you know, I'll tell you that. But we figured out, you know, we could mix it, water it down in some Kool-Aid, you know, and it went down a lot smoother, you know. But I can remember we go out in his backyard with the friends, you know, in the neighborhood playing football, and I was ready to go out there and tackle and get tackled, you know, and no fear at all, you know what I mean? And I found what I've been looking for my whole life, you know what I mean? And for me, alcohol was a solution for me in the beginning, you know what I mean? It pretty much saved my life. It gave me confidence. You know, and it made me 10 foot tall and bulletproof, I would say, you know, and you know, but I can remember that first time, that first day though, I overshot my mark and I kept drinking until I was throwing up, man. I was you know, crying, I never want to do this again, you know, and when I made it home, I can remember the next day getting up and I couldn't wait to get back to my friend's house and do it again, you know. I guess in my mind I was gonna figure out how to do it right, you know. And I'll tell you what, I threw up a whole lot that summer. You know what I mean? I didn't get right. You know. But I'm not going to tell you I was an everyday drinker from that point on at the age of 11, but every opportunity, it was always in the back of my mind. You know, every opportunity I got, I drank. And every time I drank, I've overshot my mark. You know, I never have been a social drinker. I always drank for the effect. I loved what it did for me. I loved the way it affected me. And I just loved the way alcohol felt, you know. And you know, experimenting with, from beer to, you know, liquor, you know, they had a lot of different bottles of liquor in that cabinet, you know. We tried a little bit of each one because we didn't want to get caught, you know, and noticing that one certain bottle was empty, you know. And I remember we'd pour some in mason jars, you know what I mean, before his mom and dad got home from work, and we'd go out in the walnut orchards, you know, and drink out there. And that's when we started stealing packs of Marlboro Reds out of a carton out there, too, and, you know, learning how to smoke, you know. And anyway, I can tell you within a year and a half, you know, I had done really good grades in school, you know. Like I said, I was really into sports, you know. But even in sports, you know, my life, you know, I was really involved. But, you know, I always felt like not good as on my teams because I always wanted to play that certain position. And I never got to play that position I wanted, you know, which made me feel like I wasn't that good. And by seventh grade, you know, I was drinking every opportunity. You know, my attitude started changing. Like sixth grade, my grades dropped. You know, I remember I don't remember if it was in sixth or seventh grade, you know, it was like my mom just couldn't understand why I was getting like C's, D's, and F's, you know, when I was always A's and B's, you know. And my mom, I remember she paid like a tutor to come to our house and tutor me in like math and stuff. And I think she came over about three times, and she finally went to my mom and told her, I don't feel right taking your money because he knows all this stuff. She's, all I can tell you is he's just not applying himself. You know, and that's just where alcohol took me, you know, the whole mentality, you know, of even caring. And, you know, in seventh grade, I remember trying out for the Valley Oaks soccer team. I didn't make the team, and I never tried playing sports again. You know, I focused just on skateboarding at that time and partying. And, you know, I had some friends, you know, they had the older sisters and brothers, you know, that would buy us alcohol, you know, and we'd save up our little money. You know, mowing lawns, or get our allowance from our parents, you know, and just whatever it took, you know. And in that time, you know, I always said when I started drinking, you know, it was like, you know, at least I'm not doing drugs, you know what I mean? And, you know, and through my career, you know, and my story includes a lot of outside issues, and anybody that knows me in Alcoholics Anonymous knows that I've been taught here to practice the singleness of purpose in AA, you know, and I truly do. I might like reflect on a few things tonight since I got like a whole bunch of time, but I'll try to relate it to my alcoholism. But anyway, you know, I remember I smoked and pot for the first time. It was like, you know, I was kind of nervous and all that. And, you know, but I was like, you know what, at least I'm not doing heavy drugs, you know. At least I'm not, like, doing heroin or cocaine or LSD, you know, and all this stuff. At least I'm not, like, shooting up, you know, sticking needles in my arms. And, you know, by the time I was 15 years old, I tried every single one of those drugs. And I never experimented with any because, I'm just that type of person, you know. I did everything in excess. By the time I was 18, I had needles in my arms. But to get back to my story, you know, high school for me, like, high school was just some place to meet up with friends every day and ditch a couple classes and go out drinking or doing whatever and partying and maybe come back around the lunchtime hours or something, or maybe make it to the lunchtime and then ditch the rest of the day, you know. And I did a lot of summer school, you know, just to barely graduate from high school, you know. And but yeah, high school was nothing but a party to me. I didn't care, you know. It was just a party. And for me, I can remember when I graduated out of high school, you know, I actually had a job, and I was working at this place called Bassett's Cricket Ranch. And I got that during my senior year in high school. And well, I tell you, I was the only white person that worked there. Everybody I worked with was from Linnell Camp. And I don't know if anybody around here remembers Linnell Camp back in the 80s and 90s, but yeah. And so these are the guys I was hanging out with and partying with during work, after work, you know. And it got me a whole new addiction at that time, I guess you could say. But anyway, I can remember thinking to myself, man, what am I going to do with my life, you know what I mean? And I thought about, like, the military, and that was like a fleeting thought, you know what I mean? Because, you know, I started thinking about it. I seen the movies, you know what I mean? It was a good boot camp, you know. They like to scream and yell at your face and tell you what to do. And I don't like people yelling at me and telling me what to do, you know. So I was like, that was out. And so I don't know. I can remember just kind of deciding I'll just take, like, a year off and maybe go to college or something. And I can tell you that by the time I was 19 years old, I was living on a homeless program in the Oak Tree Inn with some people. And needless to say, you know, it's not because I was home. I didn't have a home to go to. You know, I still had my parents' home, you know, but by that time, you know, they'd already pretty much changed the locks on me, you know what I mean? And, you know, my lifestyle wasn't accepted under the roof, you know. But I was living in the Oak Tree Inn, and at that time I was drinking. I was still working at that Bassett Cricket Ranch, and I was drinking like a fifth of that Albertsons brand tequila. You used to be able to give like $6 a fifth, you know, and like a fifth of that a day, and all whatever beer I can do, and then all these other issues, you know, I was pouring down in me. And I don't know, I really don't know what got into me that night. I can't even really remember the night. It was like maybe a moment of clarity. The only thing I remember about this certain night was that I ended up at my mom and dad's doorstep about 10 o'clock at night, knocking on their door, and my mom answered the door, and I looked her right in the eyes, and I told her everything I'd been doing, and I told her I wanted help. And she was busted down into tears, you know, and just whenever I was just telling her the things I was doing. But she let me in, and let me into my old bedroom, and I laid in that bed for about, I don't know, it seemed like weeks, but it was like probably 3 or 4 days, going through the shakes, the hallucinations, all the, you know, the hot and cold sweats, you know, for about 3 or 4 days. And this is at 19 years old, and not really, kind of scared, you know, not really knowing what was going on, you know, not realizing I was detoxing. And anyway, you know, my mom, I got some cousins that are in the fellowship, in the other fellowship, and my mom got a hold of them, and they got a hold of me, and they started taking me to meetings, you know, at 19 years old. And And, you know, and I stayed clean. It was in the other fellowship, and I was staying clean and sober, you know, for about 6 or 7 months, you know. But in that 6, 7 months, you know, I never did anything that anybody suggested, you know. I never got a sponsor. I never read the book. You know, I just kind of made friends in the fellowship. I was 19. There was nobody else around my age at that time around here. And, you know, I just stayed sober just by the grace of God is really all I can tell you. But, you know, I made a lot of good friends, you know what I mean? And I guess the fellowship, you know, I started going to concerts with a couple guys, you know. I remember guy Johnny Mack was around, you know what I mean? I became friends with him, and he took me skydiving one time, you know, and that was amazing. And I can tell you, though, I was just a dry, drunk, whatever, you know. My disease, you know, it got the best of me one night. I was actually secretarying a meeting. It was a Friday night meeting. It was at church right next to Pine Recovery, that one right on the corner. We had a little room in the back of it, and I had the key to the church. I had the coffee pot. I had all the literature. And I think I even had the money for the meeting, you know, to pay the rent and all that stuff. And I didn't show up on Friday night. I made a decision I was going to stop at a friend's house because my mind told me that alcohol wasn't my problem. It was all those other issues, you know what I mean? That I'd be okay just to go have one or two beers at an old friend's house, and then I'd go home and go to bed and get up the next day and everything would be cool. And I can tell you, I went by that friend's house to have one or two beers, and I never made it home that night. I never looked back. I never came to another meeting. I pretty much lost all the numbers of people in the fellowship, and I was off and running, you know. And like they say, you know, you start off right where you left off, and it just progressively got worse. And I don't know about the guilt and humility, you know what I mean? I just stayed so numb that I didn't feel it for so long. Pretty much, you know, and at that time I was living back with my parents, you know, and at that time I'm the type of guy from, like, I think even when I was in high school, you know, today, you know, I'm sober, I see how much I hurt the ones that love me the most, you know what I mean? Because my mom was that mother that would stay up all night with the scanner going, worried, sick, you know, afraid of that phone to ring and get that phone call that her son is dead or in jail. She got a call from me one time that I was in jail, and she wanted to bail me out, and I told her, don't waste your money because I won't pay her back, you know. And from that point on, I never called her every other time I got arrested, you know. And there was times I'd come home after not being home for a couple weeks or something like that, and she'd be like, where have you been? And I'd be lying to her, and the whole time she knew, she heard me getting arrested over the scanner, she knew I'd been in jail, you know. But I started drinking again, you know. I didn't go to any of the meetings, and I was about 20 years old. Within like 3 months, I was out of Bob Wiley's, doing 3 months out there, you know. And I'm not one of those people that when I'm in jail that sitting there thinking like, man, what did I do wrong? I'm never going to do this again. I'm going to straighten my life out. I was in there plotting my next party, you know what I mean? My mom and dad, they would come in every weekend, my grandma, my aunts and uncles, you know, and they'd visit me through that little glass window, talk to me. My mom would put like $20, whatever, on my books. And like the first month, you know, I'd buy all this coffee, blah, 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 you know, and then like as closer I got, you know, I'd just buy like coffee and I'd save all that money up. You know, I didn't spend it because I knew that they'd give it back to me when I got released. And that was my way of thinking when I was in jail, you know. And I, you know, it was crazy. It was almost like a high school reunion that whole 3 months. I ran into about 5 guys I went to high school with I hadn't seen. You know what I mean? It was like, what's up? You know, and we were getting high, smoking weed in jail and all this stuff, and just being stupid, you know. I didn't learn the lesson at all. But, and I met a cousin of mine. We both turned ourselves in at the same day when I went out there, and I'd never met him before. And one day after visits, he came up and asked me, who's that, your dad? You know, is his name blah, blah? And I was like, yeah. He goes, that's my cousin. I'm like, what? So I called my parents that night, and they're like, yeah, that's your cousin. And what's crazy is me and him got released at the same exact time. His mom came to pick him up. I didn't call nobody. I asked him to have his mom come back and get me out. I got my money. Back then, they didn't give you a check. They still gave you the cash when they let you out. And I had his mom drop me off at somebody else's house like at 6 in the morning. And I was banging on their window, you know, like, get up, man. It's party. You know, I'm out. And I came walking to my parents' house about 3-4 days later, trying to play it off. You know, I just got out, Mom. Well, my cousin's mom, she felt bad, and she called my mom and let her know that she dropped me off somewhere and was apologizing to her. And so, yeah, my mom was pretty upset that I didn't want to see my family, you know. I mean, I'd rather go see my friends. And, you know, and everything just went from there, you know. I mean, my life didn't change, you know. In that time, I tried controlling my drinking. I tried doing a geographic like 2 different times. I moved to Oregon like 2 different times. The first time we just lived in a camper shell, a little pickup all over Oregon, and a school bus for a while doing a hippie thing, you know. And I was, you know, it was kind of cool, you know. I wasn't all doing these hard drugs, but I was, my drinking escalated, you know. We'd find ways of making money, and you know, and we weren't like classy drinkers, you know. That in that time we were drinking a lot of those 2-liter bottles of that Carlos Rossi Rhine wine, you know, and all that. And the cheap drunk, you know. And but you know, we got tired of living like that and came back home and just got caught up in this thing. And I tried moving back to Oregon another time for about 1.5 years. Came back here because my drinking and everything was the same. Nothing changed everywhere I went, you know. And what I learned since I've been sober is no matter where I go, there I am. You know, I take myself with me. My disease goes with me everywhere I go. And but anyway, you know, nothing changed. I was in and out of jail for stupid little stuff, you know, traffic violations, wet reckless. I never got a DUI. I that was one of my favorite pastimes, was getting really drunk and getting a bunch of beer and driving around in the mountains and all over the place. It was just like a sport almost, you know what I mean? And you know, I got a wet reckless and allowing open containers, you know what I mean? That's it, you know, as far as that goes. But, you know, until on my 29th birthday, when I moved back from Oregon this the last time, I got on a job, you know. I was working there, and it was a decent job, you know, and I was actually doing pretty good for like a month, you know. I mean, I was still drinking, but it wasn't like really excessive, you know what I mean? It was almost controlling it, you know, and that's all I ever really wanted to do. I never really wanted to control my drinking or become a social drinker. I just wanted to be able to get drunk when I wanted to get drunk and not get drunk when I didn't want to get drunk, and I couldn't figure that out. I got a job. I started working, you know. I started getting these paychecks, and I had to blame it on the paychecks. You know, I got to blame something, you know what I mean, for my disease to skyrocket back to where it was. And again, you know, pretty much pushed my family away, disappeared, you know what I mean? They didn't know where I was, didn't know how to get a hold of me. You know, this was back and forth cell phones, and they probably had them, but they were like those big 5-pound ones, you know what I mean, you have to carry around. But anyway, that was in 1997 is when I started that job. And in 2002, on my 29th birthday, some friends of mine threw a birthday party for me, and I hadn't slept in probably 6-7 days, you know what I mean, and drinking constantly, and I was like really drinking heavy that day for my birthday. And you know, they threw that party, and man, this one friend of mine came up and go, happy birthday, and threw me like a quarter ounce of mushrooms, you know what I mean, and I ate the whole thing. I didn't share any, you know, I'm selfish like that. And within an hour or two or something, I was just kind of like, man, I gotta get away from all these people. So I took off for a walk. Well, when I went for that walk on my way back, you know, I ended up in silver bracelets, you know what I mean? I got caught some felonies and all that stuff, you know. I never made it back to the party, you know. They took me to jail. I think that was on like a Friday night, and they kept me in jail, I think, until like that next Wednesday night or something. I got released, but you know, I detoxed again in jail, you know, and that was miserable for about 3-4 days. And all I know is that when they finally took me in front of the judge, you know, all shackled up, you know what I mean? That judge was telling me I was looking at 5 years of state prison, or I could plead guilty and accept this program, and I'll let you out today. Well, all I heard is, I'll let you out today, and I said, guilty. You know what I mean? I had no idea what I was getting myself into, you know what I mean? And I got out like, I said, they let me out like that Thursday morning. I mean, it was a Thursday. They let me out on a Thursday. And the first thing I did, I went and cashed my check that they gave me, because, you know, now by this time they don't give you cash back, they give you checks, and I was pissed off. You know, I had to go find somewhere to cash it for me. And to the liquor store, you know, I went and got drunk, went and did some things, and I came home, and my boss held my job for me, you know, I mean, the whole time I was in jail. I don't know why. Still to this day, you know, I read the chapter to the employers, you know, and I'm just grateful, you know, I mean, for what my boss has done for me over the years. You know, I've been at the same job now for 18 years. But anyway, you know, I got out on a Thursday, I got drunk and this and that, but I went to work that Friday, and I got off, and I was just told myself, man, if I ain't done nothing, man, I'm just going to stay at home, you know. And my parents, you know, they let me drink, but they wouldn't let me, you know, get belligerent drunk over there. So, I just stayed home that Friday night and Saturday, just drank by myself at my parents' house. And Sunday morning, you know, I was probably 10 o'clock in the morning, I probably had a six-pack in me already, and this friend of mine called me up, and she's like, where you been, man? I'm going to come pick you up, we're going to party. And I'm like, cool, you know, right on, whatever. She pulled up, I grabbed me a few beers, you know, and got in the car, you know, with, like, her and her boyfriend, you know, picked me up. We're on our way to go score, you know what I mean? And not even 20 minutes after she picked me up, I was in handcuffs again, you know. And first time I'd left my house besides going to work since I've been out of jail, you know. So, you know, and I ended up getting out the next day. You know, and I hadn't even signed up for this program, this Prop 36, that I agreed to do, you know. So I went for my assessment there, and I'm telling the dude, I was like, well, you're just testing for drugs, right? I can drink. And he's like, no, we test for all of it. And I was like, I was pissed, man. You know, I was so angry. And I remember my dad, you know, he had to drive me because my license had been suspended for like many years and all that stuff, you know. I remember bitching at him, like, can you believe they told me I can't even drink? You know what I mean? That's bullshit, you know. They put me in Prop 36 in 2002. This is like in April, and I didn't stop drinking, you know. The other issues, I never really had a problem letting them go. You know what I mean? But I drank every day, and I was getting away with it. But I'm the type of drunk, you know. I was like, this old timer one time, Jerry D, man, he was, I was talking to him, and he was telling me, you know, an alcoholic, there's like two drunk, or drunk and drunk drunk, you know what I mean? And it's like, but I didn't worry about it. If I can just stay drunk, you know, I'm kind of cool. I can like maintain, you know, I might even, you know, go home and go to bed. But when I cross that line to drunk drunk, I don't know where I'm going to wake up, or, you know, none of that stuff. So I, you know, and I, it was like a fine line, you know, and I was always trying to figure that out, you know, and I had problems. And some of those times when I got that drunk drunk, I'd go do these other stupid things where I would give a dirty test and I'd get caught. So I violated out of the first thing of Prop 36, and they reinstated me into this intensive outpatient, you know, and I kept drinking through there, you know, and made it to the outpatient, though, but, you know, the same thing, you know, over and over, and got kicked out of there again, you know what I mean? I'm like, damn, I gotta do, you know, and all my friends, you know, they probably heard it 1,000 times, you know, like every day, like, man, I'll see you in 18 months, man, you know, I gotta stay sober, you know, 18 months is up, I have all kinds of money saved up, we're partying, you know, and the next night they'd be hearing me say the same thing again, you know what I mean? And I just could not drink, you know. And so they reinstated me back into another intensive outpatient, you know, and the same thing there. I remember like three of us graduated from the IOP on the same night. So what we did, we went to Brubaker's and celebrated. You know what I mean? That's where, you know, so I was going through New Heights for the second time, you know, and this time, you know, I met this one guy in there, you know, our counselor. She started telling us, you know, he's here tonight too, and she started telling us, you two ought to hang out and be buddy, you know, keep each other sober. And I'm like, all right, cool, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, that worked out real great, you know, and we'd have ice chest full of beer in the trunk of the car at New Heights waiting to get out of group. And we'd go sit at the park and drink until the meeting at the Lano Club. We'd sit and put our car in the basket and sit out in the parking lot and get drunk, you know, and that was our program we were working, you know, and needless to say, you know, they had me and him both, you know, coming in every day to check in, you know, and they'd have me checking my arms for track marks, you know what I mean, just in case, you know, and yeah, we had to check in every day. They wouldn't like look at our eyes and random tests, you know, right there and this and that. And I finally got kicked out of there, and that was it. I was violated out of Prop 36, and I had like this window of opportunity, you know, no testing, nothing for my court date to see if they would accept me in the drug court. Yeah, I mean, I was just on one, you know. But that's when I got sober, you know what I mean? I didn't pick my sobriety date. My last drunk, I can tell you where it started, and I can tell you where I woke up. I was in a blackout, you know what I mean? But when I came to on August 16th of 2004, man, there's something on the inside of me, knew something was different, you know what I mean? And I like to look at it, you know, that was me doing my first step right there. I was conceding to my innermost self that I was powerless for the first time in my life, you know what I mean? And I was so full of fear and desperation, you know, the only reason I really came back into AA is because, you know, you people are the only people that ever told me to keep coming back. You know what I mean? I didn't know where else to go, you know. And through that desperation, you know, it was the first time I had that willingness to finally ask for help. And so August 17th of 2004 is my sobriety date. Just this last Monday, I just celebrated 11 years. And I'm telling you, it's only by the grace of God. It's nothing that I did, you know. I just suit up and show up and practice God's will, you know. But when I got in here, I didn't have God's will. I didn't have a God in my life. Like I said, you know, I hated that church as a young kid. I had that attitude, you know, F God, you know, what has God ever done for me? You know, I didn't even want to believe in God. You know, I wanted to believe that He wasn't real, you know, because, you know, you hear about, you know, praying for things. Well, you know what? Like, excuse me, He never answered any of my prayers, you know. But my prayers are always, when handcuffs are on me, please get me out of this one, I'll never do it again, you know. And they never once took them off, you know, and said, you know, we'll let you go home this time, you know. That never happened. So I was angry. I had a deep resentment and anger towards God when I got here, you know. But you people in these rooms, you know, you just kind of taught me, you know. You told me, don't even worry about the God thing, just practice praying every morning and every night. Don't worry about who or what you're praying to, you know what I mean? And I was willing enough to try that. I was doing that, you know, and I got a sponsor, you know, and I started reading a book and I started working the steps, you know, and things just started changing on the inside up here, you know, the way I was thinking. You know, I'm not saying, I can tell you that God removed the obsession to drink that August 16th when I came to. I'm not going to tell you that I never thought about drinking, but that obsession, that phenomenon of craving, was gone. It's been lifted from that day on. And I can tell you the only explanation of that is God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, but I can remember I might have had about maybe 9 months, 8 months, and I was having a conversation with my mom, and she stopped me and she said, you know, I never thought I'd hear the day I heard you talk about God. And I didn't even realize it, you know. That's a moment of clarity, the first time I realized that, man, maybe I'm coming to believe. You know, know, and you know, and you know, that second step, you know, I mean, I was pretty insane, you know, I mean, emotionally and mentally, you know, when I got sober, you know, I wasn't really at my worst drinking. I wasn't homeless, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, it was a spirit moment of clarity. It was an emotional, mental breakdown, you know, and something happened on the inside to where it changed and everything was different. And I haven't lost that willingness from that day forward, you know what I mean? I can tell you, you know, recovery has been amazing, you know, and if you're new here, you know, I hope you stick around long enough to experience even half of what I've experienced here. But, you know, it hasn't been all fun and games, you know, life still happens no matter what, we're sober or not. You know, I got it, you know, the fourth step, you know, I know the first time with my first sponsor, I didn't do a real thorough, you know, fourth step, but I got into it, you know, I started uncovering, discovering, discarding these things, and, you know, and fifth step, you know, just, you know, getting that weight off my shoulders, getting out those secrets, those demons, you know what I mean, in the closet, you know what I mean? And then, you know, you get in the six or seven steps, you know, and by doing that four step and all that stuff, you start discovering some of my character defects, you know, and I learned that, you know, the six and seven steps, they're never over. They're a lifetime step, you know, they're a daily basis, you know, they're all about willingness to change, you know, to change all my behaviors to the opposite of what I'm used to, you know, and I work on those on a daily basis, you know. I mean, I still got character defects today that come out every once in a while, but you know, today I'm able to identify them and be aware of them, you know, and with that willingness I can change them, you know, and getting into like the eighth and ninth step, you know, I learned that, you know, it's not about saying sorry to people, you know what I mean, because people are getting tired of that all, you know, all their lives, you know, it's all about admitting I'm wrong and what can I do to make it right, you know what I mean, and that was a tough step, you know, I was nervous on that one, you know, and with my family, and, you know, and most of the ones with my family, you know, is a living amends, my sponsor explained to me, they really don't have to know everything, every little detail I've done to them, you know, because all my family really wants is for me to be sober today, you know. You know, the ninth, you know, step, you know, is making amends, you know. I got one amends. And this person didn't even come to me until I had about 9 years sober, you know, as my moral will be revealed. And I haven't yet been able to find this person to make that amends, but I have the willingness to do it when the time comes. And, you know, the tenth step, you know, that I'm not going to lie and sit there and say I got this journal I write down every night, you know what I mean? I do as often as I can, you know, like my sponsor talks about it, and it talks about it in 12x12 too, that spot check inventory, where you can do it right there, you know what I mean, and I can make an immediate amends, you know what I mean, whenever I can see something, you know, and, you know, I know the longer I wait to make an amends to somebody today, you know, the harder it is, so I like to try to make them. I don't like making them at all, so I try not to do anything that cause it, but, you know, for me, about 7-8 years sober, I was in a real dark place in my recovery. You know, I wasn't going to as many meetings. I stopped, you know, really praying to the God. I stopped working, living the steps and practicing the steps, you know, and I was missing something, you know what I mean? And I changed sponsors, and I got this new sponsor, the one I have today, you know, and I seen a spiritual connection in him, and I wanted that. And with this sponsor I have today, you know, I told him, he asked me what step I was on. I said, I want to start from the beginning with you, from the very beginning. And that's what we did, you know what I mean? And I've really focused on that spiritual connection in my recovery today, you know what I mean? And I've worked the steps, and 11 years sober, me and my sponsor, we meet every Sunday still and work out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's, you know, he taught me, you know, continuous sobriety requires continuous action, you know, and I like that, you know. I keep doing what I'm doing because I like what I'm getting here in these rooms. You know, and, you know, I love myself today. You know, I couldn't tell you that, you know, 11 years ago. I hated myself. And, you know, about run out of time, and, you know, if you're new, you know, just stick around, you know, get into action, you know, take some suggestions. If not, you know, I hope you go hit it hard and make it back with that desperation that I had here. You know, I hate to say it, but I had to be beaten to a pulp before I, you know, know, I was willing. You know, and the big book talks about that, you know. Some of us just have to. You know, and I can relate to the real alcoholic to that description, because that's me. And I love life, I love God, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love all you people here, and I hope you guys stick around. And thank you for letting me share.